Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's video, I am bringing you four allegedly true off-grid horror stories. You decide. Now, sit back, turn off the lights, and get comfortable. Because it's about to get spooky. When I was 10 years old, I got lost in the woods while my family was camping. I went to go walking along the trails near our campsite and got turned around. After 30 minutes of walking in circles, worry and dread bubbled to the surface. I started to think I'd never get out of these woods alive. But something else emerged inside me too. Determination. I knew I had what it took to find my way back. I sat for a few minutes to recalibrate my thoughts and let the calm wash over me. The calmer I was, the more clear my thinking became. Once I removed the fear, solutions started to present themselves. I was out and back at the campsite 10 minutes later. My parents none the wiser. Most people would have been grateful they had found their way back and never strayed too far from civilization again. Not me. Getting lost in nature activated the primal part of my brain. The clarity I felt out there was a feeling I've been chasing my entire life. From that moment, I've thrown myself into the survivalist lifestyle and never looked back. 20 years on, I'm confident I could survive anywhere. I'm damn good at this. I was choked out when I saw the cast notice for the show at the Army Surplus Store. A production company was looking for survivalists to be dropped off in the woods and document their lives as they lived off the land. I was built for this and applied as soon as I got home. Within a week, I did a phone interview. Another week, I was screen testing. A month later, I was airlifted to the middle of some Eastern European wilderness to compete for a big cash prize. One thing that happens to you when you start down this survivalist path is that your sense of fear dulls. It's not that you don't get scared anymore. A charging bear would terrify anyone. But you learn to mitigate the feeling. When you turn your fear into a problem that needs to be solved, it takes the sting out of the emotion. Something stalking you in the woods? Stop, assess, and make a plan. Stay rational, and don't let the darkness creep in. Everything is a problem that needs to be solved. This approach had served me well for years. I've had some pretty horrifying experiences in nature that would turn a weaker person's hair white. Sudden monsoons, bears raiding my camp, wolves stalking me as I gathered firewood, you name it, I've dealt with it. But nothing prepared me for dealing with a screaming Mimi. About a week into the start of the game, I was sitting pretty. I'd built a sturdy campsite, found a freshwater stream, and had caught a half dozen of fish. If things kept up, this wasn't going to be a problem. I also found myself getting incredibly comfortable talking to the camera. Sometimes, I would narrate what I was doing, and why and how it would help me. Other times, I spoke to it like it was a friend I could unburden my troubles on. It helped keep my sanity. I had taken to watching the sunset every evening. It was my reward for surviving another day. Watching the orange globe slip behind the tree line became my daily mass. A moment to reflect and contemplate. There are no guarantees in life, only that it'll end one day. Watching the sun turn from blue to black was a reminder to treasure every day we get to be on this side of the grave. My church, for lack of a better word, was near the creek where I gathered fresh water. It was about 500 feet from my campsite, so not a major hike, but everything was more challenging in the dark. I always took the camera with me because it provided a little light to help guide me back. I always got into the habit of narrating what I was seeing, or not seeing, the world around me like David Attenborough. Is that dumb? Yes. Did it help make the vast darkness less scary? Yes. Would it get me more screen time? Absolutely. It was always better if I could see a squirrel or a chipmunk because I could list everything I remembered about them. But when I couldn't, I just invented creatures to talk about. While the creatures were imaginary, I also was drawing on a pool of information I had found before I left. When I discovered where we were going, I did a deep research dive on everything I thought I'd need to know to survive out there. What started as discovering edible plants of Eastern Europe quickly devolved into looking up the area's lore. Eastern Europe is home to countless myths and legends. There was some pretty wild crap that would worry the most stoic person. I was hooked. I spent more time looking up monsters than I did anything else. In hindsight, probably not the best use of my time. But if I learned anything from watching the show, it's that you have to entertain yourself first and foremost. If you don't, you'll go crazy. Me narrating my night walks home was helping to keep me sane. There was a creative aspect to making shit up. Ah, here we see the elusive deep woods gollywop. It stalks its prey before digging its knife-like appendages into the back of the unfortunate victim. The death is a painful one. My Attenborough is terrible, and I usually end up extending riff and peals of laughter. But it helps to keep me sane. Plus, it made for good TV. Later that night, I woke up when I heard what sounded like a deer screaming in distress. It wasn't uncommon to hear nature. Deer get killed all the time. But what set me on edge was that it was really close. Like 50 feet from my campsite close. I grabbed my knife and got my boots back on. I was ready to run if I had to. For the next hour, I heard the sickening snapping of bones and sinew as the deer was devoured by the predator. I wasn't sure what kind of animal had taken down the deer and wouldn't until morning. I could look at the tracks and plan accordingly. Until then, I sat and listened to the tearing of flesh, the wet flap of meat hitting the ground, and the crack of broken bones. Whatever was out there was enjoying their meal. Naturally, I didn't get much sleep after that. As soon as dawn broke, I made my way over to where I heard the struggle. The scene wasn't what I expected. In my time in the wilderness, I had seen plenty of kill areas, but nothing prepared me for this. It didn't look like the predator killed for food. It looked like it killed for sport. The carcass had been placed on its back against a tree. The deer was split open, and its insides now resided on the outside. They hadn't been touched. The antlers had been snapped and splintered like something heavy had hit it over the head. There was blood and black goo everywhere. But the most unsettling this was what I found along the top of the deer's back. There was two massive holes along the spine like they had been stabbed by someone wielding dual machetes. For a second, I thought maybe one of the other contestants had made their way over to me.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
But I knew that was impossible. We were all scattered like seeds to the wind. But what else would have caused this massacre? I looked for footprints in the dirt, but didn't find anything. I assured last night's rain had washed them out, but for a fleeting second, I thought that maybe something had covered its tracks. Needless to say, I was on edge for the rest of the day. I did a little exploring to make sure whatever had killed the deer wasn't hanging around near me. After a few hours of looking, I was satisfied nothing was hanging around and went on with my daily routine. I had some projects I needed to finish and started working on them. I wanted to keep my mind busy so not to dwell on whatever killed that deer. I was mostly successful. Towards the end of the day, I made my familiar trek to my church to pray for another successful 12 hours. I found myself being particularly moved by the sunset. I sat and cried out in gratitude. Being alone in the woods can wear on a person, regardless of how tough they are. On my walk back, I continued with my planet Earth narration. Off to the left, you'll hear the leaping of the common brown squirrel. If things go right, that squirrel will be in my cooking pot by morning. I chuckled to myself and walked a few more steps. Not to be outdone, but there is a wild Balamar. This native species is known for its razor-sharp teeth and penchant for biting its victims in the Achilles tendon. Nastier than any Trojan soldier, I should think. I saw my campfire in the near distance, and I was about to put away the camera when I heard something start to growl off to my left, about 20 feet into the woods. I froze. I felt for where my knife usually was, but remembered I had taken it off to clean a fish and hadn't put it back. I turned the camera towards where I had heard the noise and scanned for what made the noise. It was splitting my attention between the viewfinder of the camera and the dark woods in front of me. I tried to stay as still as possible, but I was shivering. It wasn't from the cold.
Hey there! I yelled out. Stay away!
Then the camera's light reflected off a pair of eyes staring back at me. They were a few feet off the ground, like whatever animal they belonged to was stalking me. My yelling hadn't scared whatever this was away. It just let them know exactly where I was.
I'm big,
I yelled, trying to make myself sound so...
Stay away!
The eyes suddenly raised another 3 feet off the ground. It was standing on its hind legs now. My mind flashed immediately to bear. It had to be a bear.
I let out a deep scream to try to frighten the creature away. It worked. The bear let out a loud growl, then turned and ran back into the woods. I heard it crash through the underbrush. I let out a sigh of relief. "Holy fudge," I said. That was not cool. I started laughing, but it was more manic than anything. Goddamn Mother Nature. That night, when I was hunkering down for the evening, I decided to review the footage I shot. Sure enough, I managed to capture a pretty good shot of the bear. He was a mean-looking sucker, and those eyes shining back at me gave me chills. I was about to put the camera away when something else on the viewfinder caught my eye. After the bear ran off, the camera lingered in the same spot for a beat. While I yammered on about something stupid, I saw a second pair of eyes shining in the light. They didn't run away. That was when I understood what it felt like to be truly alone. Granted, I had survived now for a few weeks, and things had gotten hairy at times, but nothing made me feel fear like seeing that second set of eyes staring back at me. Those eyes looked right past that alpha predator and into my soul. I didn't sleep that night. When the sun rose the following day, it did more than simply warm me up. It was also a harbinger of good news. Today was the day the medical team paid me a visit. They didn't always show the medical checkups on the TV show, but by law, they are required to do so. I looked forward to the days where they'd arrive, if only because it broke up the monotony of bush living. I heard the boat before I knew it. I was waiting on the shore and saw the prow break through the fog. I waved my hands and watched as a boat cut through the glassy water, creating ripples throughout my little cove. They beached and walked over. I gave them all hugs. "You okay?" the medic asked, taking my blood pressure. "Rough night," I said. "Seems to be the trend today." "Why's that?" "I shouldn't tell you," he said, finishing up the rest. 110 over 70. Not too shabby." "You gotta tell me," I pleaded. "Joan got bit on the back of her leg by something. Nasty wound. She got helicoptered out last night." "Jeezo," I said. "Lot of blood on her campsite." "What bit her?" The medic shrugged. "No clue. She told us that she heard screaming before she was attacked. Screaming or bellowing, something like that. She was in shock though, so who knows?" "Oh my god." "Yeah, it's crazy. The teeth marks were unlike anything I've ever seen. Whatever got her did a number on her." "She's so nice," I said. "She'll be lucky if they could save the leg," the medic said. "How you feeling? Okay?" "Still have both my legs." "For now," the medic said with a laugh. "Be safe, huh?" "As always." They ran a few more tests and then slipped back into the fog and out of sight. After they left, I sat on the beach and thought about Joan. We had met at the pre-show boot camp and we hit it off. Honestly, I was a little attracted to her. Intimidated too. She was no joke. I remember thinking, she has a legit shot at winning this whole thing, but now she might lose her leg to an animal bite. That didn't bother me too much. We're in nature, and that can happen. But the medic admitting they had never seen a bite like that? I knew the woods well, and we'd get a crash course on the animals that lived in this area, and I was struggling to think of what it may have been. I stayed on the beach for a while. I knew I had things to do, but I couldn't will myself to get going. I kept going back to those second set of eyes.
What were they? And what had disfigured Joan? I tried to imagine the pain, and I shuddered. After a half an hour of idle time, I finally hauled myself up off the beach and turned to head back to my camp and get the day started. But as soon as I stood up, my eyes caught something unnatural on the shore. I saw a bunch of drifted wood wash up on the beach, but that wasn't what was odd. What caught me off guard was that it looked like the driftwood spelled out the name Mimi. I walked over to the sticks to get a closer look when I suddenly heard a growl from the tree line behind me. I stopped and turned my attention there and thought I may have to make a swim for it. While my attention was distracted, a wave came up and washed away the driftwood, so I never got a real good look at it. "Hey, bear!" I yelled. I heard rustling in the trees, and then something big ran away. I sighed and then started laughing. This place could work your last nerve like a boxer on a speed bag. I decided to get my mind off all this nonsense and needed to start my daily chores. Working the land helped keep my mind occupied. If I was busy thinking about...
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
While gathering firewood or catching fish, I wouldn't think about some animal ripping Joan's tendon apart or some mysterious animal stalking me. Even though I stayed busy, my head was on a swivel. Deep in the back of my mind, those eyes were haunting me, watching and waiting for something. I'd feel a chill run down my spine and turn around to see if anything was there. There never was. Right before sunset, I decided to gather some firewood. I grabbed my axe and went to the area I was slowly deforesting. I started hacking away at an old log when I heard something moving in the brush near me. I stopped chopping and eyed the greenery around me. I heard a branch snap to my left, and I spun to face whatever was out there. I couldn't see anything, but I knew something was there. "Hey!" I yelled. "I know where you are!" I heard a snort in response. At first, I thought that bear had made its way back, but then it started to yelp like a hurt dog. The screams were loud and stung my ears. There weren't supposed to be any wild dogs or coyotes near us, so whatever that was, it mimicked them. "Hey!" I yelled again, trying to get my voice as deep as Barry White-like as possible. "I know you ain't a coyote!" The yelping instantly stopped. I clutched my axe handle so hard I was afraid I would snap it in two. That's when I heard laughing coming from the bushes. Human laughing. I was taken aback. This couldn't be true. There wasn't another person near me for miles. I swallowed hard. "If you come near me, I swear to God I'll take your head clean off." The laughing got louder and louder, and then there was an ear-piercing scream. I dropped to the ground and slapped my hands over my ears. Whatever scream took off running in the woods. After the ringing in my ears stopped, I scooped up my axe and hightailed it back to camp. I didn't get any extra firewood. I didn't go to church that night. I went back to my camp and debated tapping out. After an hour or so, I put the satellite phone back down and decided to try to stick it out. As the sun slipped behind the tree line and night came rushing in, I felt the hair on the back of my neck stand. I knew whatever was out there would be back. I knew I had to stay vigilant, or something terrible could happen to me. I don't know exactly what I was dealing with, but I knew I would go down swinging. Everything was fine for the first few hours. The only sound I heard was the crackling of my fire. It lulled in my complacency. I felt my eyelids start to get heavy. The day's work and stress were taking a toll on me. As I drifted off to sleep, I heard the unmistakable sound of a woman screaming in fear right behind my tent. I snapped awake and grabbed my axe. I used the camera's light to light up the area in front of me. I walked through the brush, listening for the screaming again. As I got deeper into the bush, I heard another scream. It was definitely a woman, but that didn't make any sense. "Hello?" I yelled out. "Do you need some help?" Another scream, about 50 yards in front of me. I swallowed hard. A cool wind started to blow, but it wasn't shaking the trees. It was only blowing across the back of my neck. I dropped the camera and swung around with the axe, but there wasn't anyone behind me. The momentum of my swing sent me spinning onto the ground. While on the ground, I looked back where the breeze had come from and noticed depressions in the mud behind me. I grabbed the camera and shined the light on them to reveal cloven hoof prints. At first, I thought wild boar, but I hadn't seen any traces of wild boar near my campsite. "The F?" I said to myself. I pointed the camera at the hoof prints. They trailed off into the darkness. I stood back up and started following them. They went for about 10 feet before they stopped at the base of a pine tree. I looked to see if they went around the tree, but they didn't. They just stopped at the bottom of the tree. It didn't make any sense. Then I felt something drip onto my face. When I touched it, I instantly knew it wasn't water. It was too vicious. I pointed the camera at my fingers and saw they were black, just like the goo I had seen when the deer had been mutilated. I cursed to myself, aimed the camera light up the tree, and craned my neck to get a good look. At first, I didn't see anything. But then another drop of the black goo fell on top of my face near my mouth. A bit hit my tongue, and I nearly retched on the spot. It tasted like spoiled meat. I spit it out and then heard laughing from above me. I looked back up and saw a pair of red glowing eyes and a row of razor-sharp teeth smiling down at me like a demented Cheshire cat. It clicked instantly. I was face to face with a screaming Mimi. Before I could even comprehend what I was looking at, it screamed and then leapt from the tree into the darkness. I scrambled to my feet and swung the camera's light around. I was looking for where this little monster had gone to. My gut said they were between me and my camp, so rushing back right now wasn't an option. Even if I did, my tent was made of wood and tarp, not exactly the most sturdy building material. If this thing chomped Jane's tendon from her bone, it would make short work of my camp. In the distance, I heard the fake coyote yelps again. They seemed to be coming from my left, but as soon as I started inching that way, the sounds started coming from my right. It was like the Mimi could throw its voice. While I was deciding which way to go, I heard a woman scream about 100 yards in front of me. "Help! Help! I'm lost!" There was no logical way another soul was near me. No one would be. I was in the middle of the woods, miles from civilization. "I was with the medical team. We were out here to extract another person, but we were attacked by something," the voice yelled.
I ran and got turned around. If anyone could hear me, please help. I've been cut, and I'm bleeding.
I shut the light off. The woman's voice sounded sincere, and her story made sense. But no one had ever been seriously injured by an animal on the show's history. If someone got bit by an unidentified creature, they might move in on a team to pull everyone. Then I heard my name. The woman was yelling specifically for me.
I think your camp is near here. It's Violet. We met at boot camp. I did your first medical exam. If you could hear me, please help. This cut is deep and I need help.
Everything they said was true. Now that I had a name to go with the voice, I could see Violet in my head. We did meet that first week. She did do my first medical checkup. I knew that Mimi was out there and was capable of mimicry. But how did she know that information? About 10 feet above me, I heard the growl of a bear. I looked up to see the tree snapping back as something very large jumped onto another tree. The way this massive pine snapped back, I was afraid it would snap in two and fall on me. I rolled out of the way but tried to keep my eyes on the canopy.
Oh my God! Violet yelled. I can see it, please. If you could hear me, help! Help! For the love of God, help!
Then she screamed as the Mimi above me started laughing. No way this creature could do two different voices at the same time. Violet had to be there. She must be hurt. I turned the camera light back on.
Violet, I'm over here. Can you see the light? Follow the sound of my voice. Oh my God, you're here. You're actually here.
I moved away from the tree and near a clearing. I felt...
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country. Anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Pine needles drop on me as the Mimi in the tree above me shuffled and split its attention between Violet and me. I still had my axe and wasn't above burying it into the monster's head if it came to it.
I'll distract them. Come towards my voice.
I grabbed my axe and swung it into the tree. I did it again and again, the wood splinters hitting me in the face as I chopped away at the base of the tree. I was gonna take that turn down. The Mimi looked down at me and snarled. In quick glances, I saw those red eyes and razor-sharp teeth. I couldn't make out any kind of shape outside of that. It looked feral, whatever it was. I thought I saw two pigtails swing in front of its eyes, but it could have been anything. My attention was on bringing this tree down. The Mimi jumped from the tree, and the force of the leap was enough to send the tree crashing towards the ground. I screamed out,
"Violet, watch out!"
The tree hit the ground with a loud thud, sending dirt flying into the air. I grabbed the camera light and tried to get a clear view of Violet or Mimi. I knew they were near each other out there in the cloud.
Violet, are you okay? Say something.
As the dust started settling, I caught the shape of a figure standing on the other side of the clearing. It was Violet. She was okay. I broke into a fit of nervous laughter.
Chiso, I yelled. Are you okay? Is it near you?
Violet walked towards me, but I still couldn't see her features through a combination of the light and the settling dirt in the air. I took a few steps towards her, then stopped dead in my tracks. The form of the shadowy figure in front of me morphed from something Violet-sized to something a lot smaller, like a little girl with pigtails. Then they smiled. And I saw those razors grinning back at me, Their eyes turned red and narrowed on mine. There never was a Violet out here. There was only a screaming Mimi. Oh, fudge, I said, swinging my axe up to my shoulders. Mimi reared its head back and let out a glass-shattering scream. I dropped to the ground and covered my ears, but it was too late. They were ringing, and the outside world sounded muffled. The only thing I could hear clearly was my rapidly beating heart. I was screwed, and I knew it. I could turn and run, but this thing would catch me. It had been toying with me for a while now and wanted its reward. My only option was to stay and fight. I had an axe and the will to go down swinging. If nothing else, I had a puncher's chance. I clawed back to my feet and squared my stance. I gripped the axe hard. If you're gonna do this, let's do this, I yelled, probably louder than I would have normally. My hearing was seriously effed. My heart was racing, and I could feel each beat reverberate through my body. It felt like I was buzzing. I came into the wilderness to survive, and this was the ultimate test. Forget making a fire. It was time to scalp a ghoul. The Mimi screamed again and rushed towards me. I waited, and my mind wondered what it would feel like if those teeth sank into my skin. I'd leaned out already. They'd probably chomped down on my bones. Plus, this Mimi was pissed at me. There'd be revenge. I swallowed hard. My heart was beating so hard I thought I might keel over before I even had a chance to fight back. I thought I felt it in my limbs, but then I realized I was feeling and hearing something else. A helicopter. Suddenly, over the tree line, a spotlight shone in the clearing. The medical helicopter had returned. Mimi growled and screamed, but it was drowned out by the whirling blades above me. Someone from inside the helicopter tossed something out on the ground. It was a flash bag. The sudden burst of light nearly blinded me. I slammed my lids shut, but I could see white rings on the inside of my eyelids. I heard the Mimi scream just over the din of the blades. I opened my eyes and let them adjust. They tried, but my vision was still effed. I did see the Mimi turn and run into the darkness. Head back to the beach now, I heard over a loudspeaker. I didn't hesitate. I turned and stumble ran as fast as my shoddy eyes and wobbly legs would take me. I heard the helicopter arc overhead and head for the beach. A few minutes later, I bursted through the trees and was greeted by 6 heavily armed soldiers and the show's medical team. They waved me over, and we all scrambled onto the helicopter. A few seconds later, we were rising above the woods. "You okay?" the medic asked. "No," I said, "but I'll be fine." The medic laughed and patted me on the shoulder. I kept my eyes peeled to the woods below. I knew the screaming Mimi would be looking up at me too. As we blinked away, I swear I saw it walk onto the beach where the helicopter had landed. I saw those red eyes. When I returned to base camp, I discovered they had pulled everyone from the woods. Some people were banged up, but some were dealing with serious injuries. Later, they told us the screaming Mimi had come for us all. When I asked about what it was, they didn't answer. They just gave me an NDA to sign. In exchange, we all got paid handsomely. I'm telling you this now because F it. Even if they sue me and take everything, I'll just go live off the land. I've done it before, I could do it again. My guess is that they won't do shit. Discovery in a lawsuit could be a surprise package that might just be a pipe bomb. Deny it, and it dies. I still don't have any clue what the hell a screaming Mimi is, or what it wants, or where it came from, or anything. It's a mystery I do not want to explore. Eastern Europe is already filled with ghosts. I'm content to let them all F off together. I still camp off the grid. I need to. It's a feeling I get in my bones, the desire to reconnect with nature. These days, though, I bring a pretty wild collection of weapons with me. If the axe and knife can't stop something, maybe the holy water will. Haven't had to use it yet, but I'm ready. I'm always ready. The sign above the chain read, "Welcome to Ascension. In this world, not of it." The fence the chain was attached to was about 4 feet high and consisted of only a single bare metal wire that ran along the top of it. The letters were hand-painted on a few strips of wood strapped together to make the sign. The wood was chipped off at the corners and worn down from the wind. It had been here a while. At the top of the hill, I could just make out what looked like the top of an old building. I ran into the wire on day 8 of my planned 3-day hiking through the San Rafael Swell backcountry. It's not the first time something like this had happened. There are abandoned buildings, ranches, and towns scattered all over this area. I followed the fence for about a mile until I got here. It's kind of a big deal to discover, or rediscover, I guess, a new ghost town, and Ascension wasn't on my map, so I dropped a pin and took the chain off the fence. I'd get some good pictures, write up what I find, and maybe even have a night with an actual roof over my head. Things like this are why I don't follow the established trails anymore. At the top of the hill was what looked like an old storehouse of some sort. And looked down past it, I could see the rest of the town. It was a one lane with only a small number of buildings lining it. There were 19 houses, two of which were reduced to only their foundations, a store, the storehouse I was next to, and a church. Usually a town this size would have a bar as well, but judging from the sign and the size of the church, I wasn't surprised that there wasn't one. The store was still plenty sturdy and had a couple of tables to boot, so I set up my bedroll on the counter. I carry a small collapsible solid fuel stove that works with wood just for the occasions like this. I set it up outside and collected enough wood for dinner and breakfast. A hot meal eaten in a chair at a table is a rare comfort on hikes like this, and sitting there watching the sunset had me feeling like royalty. I slept like a baby. I woke up the next morning feeling like a new person. I got the water over a fire and started packing up, finishing as the water hit a boil. With a belly full of hot coffee and warm food, I stashed a pack behind the counter and set out to document the town as well as I could before I got on my way. The houses were plain and functional and exactly alike. Each had 3 rooms. Each back room held a single large bed, with a varying number of beds in the side room. A single rocking chair was in what I called the living room, which was otherwise empty except for a wood stove on the outside wall for heat and a cooking surface. Above each stove hung a cast iron skillet. There were very few other possessions that I could find. The beds had blankets in states of decay, and there would be some tin plates and knives. That was about it. I expected I'd find Bibles, crucifixes, and other religious paraphernalia. But there was nothing. I guess they must have been the austere kind of wayward Christian community. I felt a little sorry for them, but even if it looked sad to me, this was someone's dream at one point. I just took my pictures and moved on. As I approached the church, I saw something dart into one of the houses. Just a quick flash of grayish brown. There's coyotes out here, but it's not normal to see one during the daylight. I moved a little closer, stepping carefully. There was a crash from the other side of the house as it knocked something over, then silence. I stood frozen for a moment, listening hard before I gave up, assuming the crashing sound was whatever I saw getting out of town by the way of the back window. I took a moment to relax before turning back to the church. It was an absolutely massive building in relation to its setting. You could fit at least two of the local houses in its footprint, stack them up too high, and still not have ran into the steeple. A quick walk around confirmed that there was no decorations or windows, and only one set of doors. They didn't seem to have a cross. The steeple was the only thing that gave it away as a church. The wood was worn and cracked, but otherwise still whole. It looked like it had been painted white at some point, but the only paint left was little flecks trapped into a few spots of deeply worn grain. The rest had taken on a dark gray, almost black patina. It was an old building, for sure, but it looked to be in surprisingly good shape from the outside. The door opened with no resistance and barely even a sound. I stepped inside, pausing for a moment while my eyes adjusted. The only light came from the large open doors behind me. Looking around, there were pews near the door and a podium in the back. The pews were arranged in a semicircle around the center of the room with the preacher's podium on the far side, leaving a large open space in the middle. Everything was in surprisingly good shape. The pews were dark and worn. The wood had taken on the same almost black patina as the walls of the church, but the polished spots along the length of them where the churchgoers sat. I got a couple nice pictures of the sun's rays beaming in through the doors behind the pews. It was a strange arrangement, having this much empty space in the center. Moving closer, I could see that the blackened wood floor was laid with each strip of flooring coming to an end in order to form a circle and a new piece continuing the wall. It didn't seem to have any purpose. The floorboards were just laid out in a way that traced out a circle. As far as I could tell, this was the only bit of pure decoration in the entire town. I got down on my knees at the edge of the circle to try to get a picture of how it was made. The ends of the strips of wood from inside the circle butted against the ends outside the circle almost perfectly, without even enough space to collect dust. There were no nails, but it was fastened tightly. I held my phone out, moving it around to try to get the best angle to show how the floorboards came together, and a shadow passed over the door. I froze, looking up at the still open door, waiting to see if something was going to join me in the church. The edge of the grayish-brown form brushed against the doorway, and I quietly scurried behind the podium for a little cover. I squatted down, making myself as small as possible behind the dark wood of the podium, only allowing one eye to peek out from safety. My muscles filled with energy, and my nerves set a hair trigger ready to run. Something moved under the church. The floorboards in the middle of the circle buckled up slightly, and the whole building shifted slightly under its force. I bolted. I ran fast and hard out of the church and into the store, where I rolled behind a window. Peeking out over the sill, I saw a grayish-brown shape crawl out from under the church and stand up. They looked to be about 5.5 feet tall, wearing shoddy pants, a hooded cloak, and no shoes. The fabric of the clothing had been taken on the same patina as the wood, but also carried enough sand to make it difficult to pick them out from the landscape. The skin of their bare feet was caked with sand as well, as if they had rolled in a patch of wet sand and just let it dry over them. I stood up and waved, shouting, Hey, sorry! I didn't know anyone lived here!" They looked at me, then turned and ran, disappearing behind one of the old houses. Walking outside,
I held my hands to my mouth as a makeshift megaphone and shouted out, "Sorry! I didn't know anyone lived here! Thanks for letting me stay! Sorry for the trouble!" I turned and went back into the store to get my pack and leave. It had never occurred to me that anyone would be living here. Everything was so old. It may have been kids from a neighboring ranch plane, but either way, I didn't want to stick around. Coyotes are one thing, but people, well, they're just unpredictable. I reached behind the counter to grab my pack and came up with a fistful of air. It was gone. I ran behind the counter, checked everywhere, and came up with nothing. They must have taken it. A feeling started to percolate in my gut, a tightness. I closed my eyes tight, trying to breathe through it to let it lighten up, and then turned and walked back out the door. I held my hands up to my mouth again to help with projection. "Hey y'all, I need my pack. I got no problems leaving here. I could pay you for any troubles I've caused. Honestly, I didn't know anyone was here. If you just give me my pack, I'll be on my way." I stood there for a long minute waiting for a response. Nothing. Shoot. My shoulders slumped. I walked to the side of the church where I'd seen the person crawl out and found a small dugout tunnel where they had went under the church. A sizable rock sat next to it with a short trail in the dirt from where it had been pushed out and away. I looked around hesitantly. I got down on my knees and peered into the hole. Light streamed in through the floorboards. My pack sat in a hollowed-out area underneath the center of the church. I could see my water bottles glinting in the light, hanging off my pack. I sat back on my knees for a minute. "Damn it!" I cursed to myself, standing up and brushing off the dirt. I walked around the church, checking for anyone else who might be nearby. At the front of the church, I paused to check inside before coming around to the tunnel again. I looked around, taking care to look for any patch of color that didn't quite match the sand. And then I did what I had to do. I got down on my hands and knees and started crawling into the hideout under the church. It didn't take long to get my pack. I grabbed it and spun back where I came. My hand found the sunlight pouring through the opening of the dugout just in time to see the rock pushed over it. "No, no, 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 no!" I said as I scurried up against the rock, pushing with all my might. If I really laid into it, I could occasionally nudge the rock just enough to see that someone was out there holding it in place with their foot. Hey, I'm in here! You can have the pack if you want. Just let me have the water and I'll leave you alone, I swear. I don't even know anyone lived here. It was an accident." Many footsteps echoed through the small cavern as people poured into the church above. "The Lord had brought us a blessing." A dry, gravelly voice spoke from above as I passed beneath the center of the church. "So many years of waiting since our betrayal at the hands of our unbeliever." My knees caught on a rock, tearing open a small wound. The sand and dirt mixed with the blood to form a clay poultice. I gritted my teeth and kept pushing, driving more and more clay into my leg. "Quickly now, gather around and we will complete our journey," the voice declared, stepping into the center of the circle above me. "Quickly, while our volunteer is available." I grabbed the water off my back and attached it to my belt hoops, then leaned into the rock and pushed hard. My effort met by equal resistance. The rock wouldn't budge. The sun came in through a space where the rock didn't quite fit in the hole. I put my fingers out, trying to get a hold of the rock to push it aside. A flash of pain shot up my arm as a rock came down on them. I recoiled, cradling my hand. Nothing broken, but more blood dripped off of me in the sand. The congregation above me began chanting in a language I didn't recognize. Many people joined, each selecting their own singular pitch.
It was almost beautiful. A raspy choir forming the perfect chord. Overtones reverberated through the walls of the church, sinking into the sand below. The ground vibrated a tone in return, sending a wave back up into the church. I felt it move through my body each time, the congregation calling and the ground responding. It started to lodge itself in my lungs, vibrating as if I was about to hum along. The ground beneath the rock was loose, and a bit of it fell away. I started digging quickly, hoping to undermine the rock and pull it out from under my captor's feet. The congregation changed keys and gained tempo. The congregation reached their peak, and the sound responded with a deep, vibrating tone. I braced myself between the floorboards and the ground below me, as the entire landscape joined in resonance with the chanting above me. Everything was vibrating. The slats of the wood floorboard to separate the dust and sand fell through them, and the circling floorboard began to twist in place. A bright darkness enveloped the space beneath the circle, and the sand began to boil. The rock fell into my tunnel. I took my opportunity, grabbing the rock and scurrying out of the dugout. A wet splotch slapped on the ground behind me as I passed my captor, who had stepped back and was facing the church with his arms wide, looking past me. I ran hard, pushing my legs far beyond what I thought they were capable of, only looking back once. The church was encased in black as the ground was chewed through my captor. I held my glance along long enough to meet the gaze of a single grotesque eye blurring into existence. Its undulating iris filled with pupils deeper than should have been possible. I ran hard, replacing the chain fence and once again completing the iron circle. I ended my hike early, coming home bruised and aching but alive. There are mounds beneath my skin where the clay had worked itself in and never left. And I still have the rock they used to keep me down there. I was so focused on getting out, I forgot to drop it. Every once in a while, I could hear it humming on its shelf. I'm posting this story here, begging for you guys to believe me. I've seen you all go through some crazy stuff, and I desperately need your help. If it helps anything, I'm in Louisiana. For some context, me, 19, and my four friends, Perry, 19, Gwen, 21 female, and Jordan, 18, and Jesse, 20-year-old female, had a small YouTube channel, only about 200 subscribers and the average 10 to 30 views per video. We called ourselves Cryptid Hunters. We just record bushes with shaky hands, screaming at every noise in the woods. We'd usually have a few set spots, swamps, forests. Usually that's where we would explore and look at. We cleared them out, seen it all. So we decided we would go to a new swamp further away from our homes with this rusty van Jordan bought with some money from his side jobs. We went to the place, checked it out. Usually with new places, we don't really do this, but we chose to split up. It's a pretty big area, so Jesse and Perry suggested that we should split up, cover more ground. Stupid idea, even to me. And if I was in a horror movie, I probably would be the one to call out, "Anyone there?" So Jesse and Perry went together, then me and Jordan and Gwen went together. I was holding a camera while Jordan and Gwen had the GoPros strapped to their heads. We were in that place for hours. It was hot and uncomfortable. We barely got any footage, and were on the verge of just waiting in the van, until my stupid self chose to do a stupid bit to make the hypothetical video entertaining. I laughed to myself thinking about it, and told Jordan my idea. He'd do a dumb dance or something, and then I'd record him saying, "A white guy in his natural habitat!" A dumb joke for a dumb video for an even dumber channel. Gwen and I sat in a bush, so it would seem more realistic. She kept whispering how she was getting bad vibes. Unfortunately, I didn't listen. I didn't care when I heard the first few twigs snap. I didn't care when Gwen was tugging on my sleeve. I didn't care until we saw something pounce from the trees and make me see what a stomach looks like. I almost screamed. My heart was pounding in my ears, and I think Gwen fainted. I don't want to go into detail because even thinking about it makes me sick to my stomach. The smell of death was pungent, and after that thing dragged him away, me and Gwen could do nothing but run until we saw the van. Perry and Jesse were already there, and when they asked where Jordan was, I just screamed at him to frickin' drive already. I tried showing people the footage. No one believes me that it wasn't a bear or a wolf. But I saw it. It wasn't a wolf. It wasn't a bear. It wasn't human. I pray to God if there is one that someone will please tell me what the hell ate my friend. I need closure. At least a tiny bit. Edit. Some of you have been asking for more details. Sorry for not giving more originally. We're located in Acadiana. I don't remember the name or location of the swamp, really. You have to understand, there are like 1,000 here. The type of van was a Chevy Express 3500. I've been looking over I and Gwen's footage more, and it looks a lot like what your comments suggested. Aruguru. Thank you for everyone's help. I'm really grateful. I'll try asking some locals for any more information on it. This happened to me a few years ago. I live near a lake, more of a pond, really. But this isn't opposed to debating the logistics of what makes a lake a lake. Right up the road is a small hill that leads to a hiking trail. I know this trail like the back of my hand. One night, I decided to go on the lake. It had just got done snowing, and there was a full moon. And like that Disney princess, the cold never bothered me anyways. It was a little slippery going up the hill. The trail was a little buried under the snow. But it's a full circle, impossible to get lost. I get going and finally made it to the part of the trail where it's covered in trees. But being wintertime, it more resembles bony hands reaching towards the heavens. This is when I saw it. I saw a silver light shining in the distance. The way it moved, I assumed it was some trash caught in a tree. The closer I got, the more it began to take shape. I got about 500 to 600 feet away when I saw it was a woman. She was in a silver dress, a really fancy looking one. It's definitely not something anyone would wear in this weather. As I got closer, I could see she looked like she was crying. I assumed she was lost or in some type of danger. I called out to her, but she paid me no attention. I began to walk closer to her, and as I did, she began to walk towards the lake. It was a pretty steep drop-off to the lake from where she was. I began to run after her to see if I could help, but by the time I reached to where she had been, there was nothing or no one around. I looked around and even climbed down to where she would have fallen, but nothing. Not even prints in the snow except for mine. By the time it dawned on me, there was no trace of her even being there. I heard a scream like nothing I had ever heard before. I looked up to see that the woman was just walking on the water. It may have snowed, but it definitely wasn't cold enough for the lake to freeze. I stood there frozen in fear as it dawned on me what I was seeing. She let out one more scream before sinking under the lake. I hightailed it back to the trail and back to my home in record time. I'm not even sure what I've just seen was real. I've never gone back at night hiking, and even now, I never go alone in the day.